evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Evident Footprints on BBSRadio.com. I'm your host, Don Nikoloff, and I will be with you on this Christmas night for the next hour. 'Twas the night before Christmas. He lived all alone in a one-bedroom house made of plaster and stone. I had come down the chimney with presents to give, and to see just who in this home did live. I located all about a strange sight I did see. No tinsel, no presents, not even a tree. No stocking by mantle, just boots filled with sand. On the wall hung pictures of far distant lands. With medals and badges, awards of all kinds, a sober thought came through my mind. For this house was different. It was dark and dreary. I found the home of a soldier once I could see clearly. The soldier lay sleeping, silent, alone, curled up on the floor in this one-bedroom home. The face was so gentle, the room in such disorder. Not how I pictured a United States soldier. Was this the hero of whom I just read? Curled up on a poncho, the floor for a bed? I realized the families that I saw this night owed their lives to these soldiers who were willing to fight. Soon bound the world, the children would play, and grown-ups would celebrate a bright Christmas day. They all enjoyed freedom each month of the year because of the soldiers like the one lying here. I couldn't help wonder how many lay alone on a cold Christmas Eve in a land far from home. The very thought brought a tear to my eye. I dropped to my knees and started to cry. The soldier awakened, and I heard a rough voice. Santa, don't cry. This life is my choice. I fight for freedom. I don't ask for more. My life is my God, my country, my core. The soldier rolled over and drifted to sleep. I couldn't control it. I continued to weep. I kept watch for hours, so silent and still, and we both shivered from the cold night's chill. I didn't want to leave on that cold, dark night, this guardian of honor so willing to fight. Then the soldier rolled over with a voice soft and said, purely whispered, carry on, Santa, it's Christmas Day, all is secure. One look at my watch and I knew he was right. Merry Christmas, my friend, and to all a good night. That was written by an anonymous member of the United States Marine Corps. And I received that and by hand and promised that I would read that on tonight's opening. Our thoughts go out to all the soldiers around the world who are protecting our freedom, protecting our sovereignty, and doing the thing that is right. They're sacrificing their lives so that we can be with our families, as many were today, and they make a sacrifice that causes them to be separated from their families. So may our thoughts be with all the soldiers from the United States military around the world on this Christmas night. Our guest this evening has been on the show many times, and he is with us to talk about many things tonight. We're going to be mindful of what Christmas is about and talk about things that are going on now. Let's not lose sight of what's happening around the world in our celebration on this holy day. Our guest is a web master of a website called educate-yourself.org, one of the most popular research sites in the world, if not the most popular. And he is also a metaphysical scientist. He has invented a few items, or at least makes these items, following orgone energy principles. And as well as that, he is a prolific author himself, journalist, investigator, researcher, and my good friend, Ken Adachi. Ken, Merry Christmas, and welcome to Evident Footprints tonight.
Thank you, Don, and Merry Christmas to you as well.
How was your day?
It was a very nice day. We had relatives over, and we had a very nice time. We went to see a movie, went out to eat dinner at a Chinese restaurant, and we had just a wonderful time. It had been raining a little bit for the last couple of days here in Southern California, which I'm very grateful for whenever it does rain. And the rain ended this afternoon and got quite cold, so that's telling me a cold front must have moved into the area, but it feels good here. Perhaps in the show I'll make a little bit mention about the recent incredible things I've noticed concerning chemtrail spraying that has picked up a great deal here in Southern California in the last 2 months at least, and particularly in the last week. But I've noticed some really remarkable things, so maybe I'll mention that a bit as we talk tonight. I would like to perhaps begin our talk tonight by stating something that I feel needs to be recognized and underscored. Christmas is a celebration of the birth of Jesus Christ. It's almost for certain that he was not actually born on December 25th.
Mm-hmm.
Anyone who's even a minor student of biblical scriptures, etc., probably knows that. I've heard many estimates, many dates thrown around. February and March seem to be the most common months that I hear. It's probably true that the Catholic Church probably around the time of the Council of Nicaea, around 323 AD or so, I'm not dead sure on the date, but they probably fixed the date of December 25 because it did coincide with an important pagan date.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it had to do with a ritual to Saturn, I believe it was and there's other aspects of the story of Christ being born of a virgin mother, being part of a trinity, etc. Some major, let's say, dogma planks, if you will, in the Catholic religion, at least. We're probably borrowed from other folklore. I'm not sure that of that for sure, but I know David Icke points that out in his book.
Mm-hmm.
What I'm getting to is this: I'm concerned about, and I'm ready to defend the attempt in the last dozen years or so. 10 to 12 years, I would say, of people who have published books and get a lot of play on the internet. They're interviewed for radio shows. They show up in video documentaries. In the recent Zeitgeist, the movie documentary that came out about 2 years ago, had the opening section of it devoted to this notion of essentially, in a very crafty way, They wanted to debunk the idea that Jesus Christ ever existed, for one. And there's a there's a woman who gets a lot of play on the internet, and she's interviewed for radio shows. She goes by the name of Acharya S. And she produced a book, I think it was around 1998 or 99. It's somewhere in there. And she titled it The Greatest Story Ever Sold. And her premise was that Jesus Christ was never a person who actually existed, but rather he was a concocted myth by the Catholic Church, and he was created. And she uses a lot of what she claims is archaeological science. I'd have to dispute that, because I don't think she is a person who can lay claim to be an archaeological professional, although she does, because she just simply doesn't have the experience or the credentials to support the notion that she's a professional archaeologist, although she claims she does. But when you actually examine her data, that's not quite the case. I found that her book and subsequent books, she came out with another book perhaps 3 years ago, I'm not sure, approximately 3 or 4 years ago, in which not only does she continue to debunk the notion that Jesus never existed, but other famous personalities, if you will. For instance, she claims that Buddha never existed, another created mythological character, she says. She says Krishna, which is a personage of the Hindu religion, never existed. So if you buy into her information, according to her, there is no major spiritual world-renowned leader
or prophet. These were all prophets. Yes.
Yeah. The last 2,000 years ever actually existed. If you're prepared to believe what she has to say, they're all myths created in the interest of gaining power and influence, etc., of the religions that represent these what she claims are mythological characters. And it concerns me that this gal seems to gain ground with people who, in my estimate, ought to know better. But I find that people who, let's say, are weak in their historical backgrounds are too easily ready to capitulate to the arguments that this gal puts forward, which are just riddled with pseudoscience and pseudo-logic.
Well, this is all a setup for this individual that they plan to bring forth, the guy Benjamin Cream calls Maitreya.
Right. Maitreya is one personality that we've noticed. Again,
and Barack Obama, too. We have him now. He's the Messiah.
Right. So the point is that
Al Gore, let's add him, too. The weatherman now. He's the universal weatherman.
Maybe we'll have to start calling him Saint Al.
Anyway. Saint Al. Saint Al, the weatherman.
Yeah. So anyway, I just want to just take a few moments to emphasize that I've had a number of people send me emails who bought into the argument that this gal put forward, and I in turn would rebut those arguments, and I have maybe, I don't know, 5 or 6 or 7 rather lengthy rebuttal, you know, articles to try to address this this attempt to debunk the existence of Jesus Christ. Now, a reasonable person is not required to be a Christian, be a Catholic. You certainly don't have to accept or believe that Jesus Christ is the one and only Son of God. We're not asking people to do. I'm not asking people to do that. But what I'm saying, however, is that this individual Jesus Christ. There is so much historical documented history of the man by multiple sources that to just sweep it all away with very specious and unsound arguments, as this gal, Akshara S., does in her writings, in her talks, etc. If she's let's say, well indoctrinated in her spiel,
mm-hmm.
and if I've heard some of her interviews, certainly sounds convincing. If you aren't, let's say, somewhat tuned up, or you don't have some historical perspective or knowledge in this area, I could see a lot of young people just capitulating to her because they just figured, well, she seems to know what she's talking about. But she's in the business of helping or assisting the Illuminati to destroy a belief in, first, Jesus Christ, but secondarily in spirituality in general. That's why she added to her list other well-known spiritual leaders of the past, 2,000 yeah. years.
And she gives them all December 21st, 5th as a birth
mm-hmm.
date, too,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
which is part of the disinformation.
Yeah. So there are undoubtedly, tens of thousands of people around the world who've gained undergraduate and graduate and doctoral degrees in the subject of scriptures and biblical erudition. And it just bothers me to no end that I don't hear a peep from anyone who's in the business on the internet. I don't know if it's discussed in any church. I doubt it. And what I don't know is my only perspective is on the footing this gal. She's not the only one, but I mention her because she's the most recognized person who's been leading this charge to debunk the existence of Christ. She's the one I see most often on the internet. But there is a growing cadre of people around the world, when I read these blogs particularly, that are too easily drawn into her propaganda. And I got an email from a guy who lives in Thailand. He's a younger guy. He's probably in his late 20s. He sent me his website. He said, I've been told I should contact you. And I started to read his blog. Very intelligent guy. And he really was doing a very good job of kind of outlining all the sins of the Illuminati and the takeover agenda. And I was really impressed with what he had to say. I was quite pleased. And however, as I continued to read his material, so my initial response to him was very open and positive. I said, I put him on my website. This is going back perhaps a year ago. I put his link on my website, and I kind of boosted his site a little so people would go there. But as I continued to read his material in the coming days after the initial quick examination of his stuff, I realized that he had hook, line, and sinker bought into and accepted the debunking premise of this woman, Akshara S., and he, he's... So I'm not going to be part of that. I'm going to, quite the opposite, I'm going to be a defender of the historical history of Jesus and Buddha and Krishna, etc. Now, I really don't want that for a job, Don. It just kind of bothers me that the professionals who have degrees in this, who've made, biblical scripture studies their life work, I see no one on the internet stepping up to the plate. They have the credentials. They have the background. They've devoted their entire career. What are they doing? This is the time to act. This is the time to say something in which the Illuminati is trying to gain ground in destroying a belief in Jesus, because they want to destroy a belief in the message of Jesus, which is compassion, love thy neighbor as thyself, the golden rule, etc. They, meaning the Illuminati, want to install not only a one-world government, but they want to install Satanism as the world's religion. They're calling it the one-world religion in their current propaganda, but that's just a bridge, a stepping stone. The ultimate goal is to have a world who worships Lucifer. That's the goal.
Mm-hmm.
So to arrive at that, they need to first destroy Christianity. It's right at the top of their list of things to do, and destroying Christianity. So they're using people. I'm only guessing, of course, but because of this woman's father's role with the Navy, and because of the work she does, I have a strong suspicion the woman's been programmed to do this. She certainly fits the mold, the behavior mold of a programmed individual.
It may not even be a woman, too, Ken. You know, we have this other individual peddling herself as a Russian journalist, Sorsha Fall, and people that have checked on the website come up with the name David Booth. And I can tell you that David Booth has aliases. So it may not even be David Booth.
Yeah, you're right. Well, in that regard, I've also written about Sorsha Fall, and yes, that probably is a made-up name, and there probably is. For a time, this is going back 4 or 5 years ago, there was a time when I saw advertisements, maybe it was in the email, that she was going to speak at some conferences in the U.S., and so they put a little picture of what they claimed was her. It looks like, you know, pleasant-looking woman, perhaps in her late 20s or so, a nice-looking girl, and they were claiming this was Sorsha Fall. So because she supposedly was going to go to these conferences, I started to think, well, maybe there is such a person. But I come to find out she never showed at any of those conferences. She never actually appeared before an audience. So it's either David Booth doing all the, trying to peddle himself off as her, or it's some other individual who's associated with David Booth. But anyway, getting back to this gal, no, I believe she is. She's done many interviews. She has DVDs, etc. I haven't seen them, but so I've heard her on radio interviews, and I forget her true name. She came out for the first time with her true name last year, in mid 2007 or late 2007. I believe my criticisms of her in previous years, when I've written about her, in which I would say, why won't this woman identify herself with a real name? I think that criticism might have gotten to her, and she probably realized that to gain more credibility, she would have to reveal her name, which she has. I just can't remember what it is off the top of my head. However, I just need to express my concern that there are no biblical scholars, and they're probably sequestered in, you know, theological colleges all over the world. Apparently they don't know the internet exists and that millions of people are influenced by what they read on the internet. Apparently they're happy to just quietly accept their pay and just lead a quiet, uneventful life, perhaps teaching or being funded to do research. But if there ever was a time for biblical scholars to step up to the plate and to defend the historical evidence of Christ's existence, this is the time to do it. You know, when the New World Order takes over and Satanism becomes the order of the day, then it's a little too late. So I'm really frustrated that the professionals in the business don't defend what, you know, somebody like me who doesn't really have the background, doesn't really have the time, has to do.
Well, maybe they're in on it, number one, or the other thing would be that they're looking at what, and I'm speaking about the religious historians that you refer to, maybe they see what happened to the biologists, so they want to stay out of it.
Yeah, I feel the ones who are at least aware of it, and I have to believe somebody's aware of it, are simply cowards, and they want to just... So if they're merely scholars and they don't have any appreciation or a concern about the fact that the Christ, Jesus Christ himself, his existence is being debunked, and this debunking effort is widespread on the internet. There's more than just this one gal involved in this effort. And the fact that I don't see anybody, well, excuse me, I have to say there are some people who have, there's a couple websites that specifically have taken this issue on vis-a-vis the Zeitgeist movie, and one guy has a website called Zeitgeist The Challenge, and he does challenge, thank God, much of the pseudoscience and the false conclusions that Acharya S. comes to in her talks and in her writing. So I'm happy to see that. But again, as far as I know, those guys aren't biblical scholars.
What I see going on here, Ken, is, you know, from a spiritual perspective, is a lot of people are arguing over something which is just the psyops. I mean, they know many people don't read either. You mentioned the scriptures and historical documents, and people aren't reading these days. This is why they came out with a video. It's far easier. People are trained to watch movies. They're trained to watch TV programs. And you see this, and you don't question it because somebody actually took the time to produce this movie. It must be true.
Yes.
If we don't see Luke Skywalker or John Wayne or Elvis mm-hmm. Presley. And those are just three examples. We could say Britney Spears and Michael Jackson. And so it doesn't really matter who it is they're putting in front of us. And they're all related to the politicians, by the way, just to remind you.
Yes, exactly.
They've got us talking about this. This is the point I'm trying to make here. They've got us talking about the disinformation instead of the information. Mm-hmm. You know, we're talking about, and I'm not criticizing you for bringing it up. This is what we do on the show, is to bring people's awareness to what's going on. Why does a person who uses the name Acharya as an alias hide the last name of the alias with a letter?
Right, I don't know, and I have commented when first writing about her. Of course, that's a Sanskrit word, I believe, and it sort of means teacher, or wise person, or sage. And I have to ask myself: is this woman so egotistical that she simply anointed herself with this name? She seems to be a iconoclast. So, and since she's debunking, the deities of Hinduism and Christianity and Islam, etc., so she's in the business of debunking. Usually, if one is going to be given this name, it's by a guru, I suppose. So, since she's in the business of debunking all of these groups, how did she acquire the name? Did she simply anoint herself with this name? She never explains.
Well, she's debunking the Pope, too, then, no? I mean, she's debunking all organized religion.
Well, again, I'm focusing on this notion that she, in her talks, and there's a number of, first she's done a number of interviews with Jeff Frenz, for instance. I haven't listened to them yet, but I see, you know, he interviewed her, and he also gives, you know, quite a few of her articles go up there. And what she tends to do of late, in the last 6 months, or year, I should say, I and others who've defended the historical record of Christ have mentioned there is a person who wrote
a detailed history of the life of Christ after Christ left the earth, and his name was Josephus. And he was he had the opportunity to talk to and interview many people who had met Christ when he was on earth. So his he's often offered up as one of the non-gospel writers who supported who had a rather lengthy written biography of the life of Christ.
Mm-hmm.
So I notice in her talks, or at least her papers that she's put up for rent, that she seemed to focus on debunking Josephus. So therefore, she looks to, well, who are the sources that my critics are using to defend the historical record of Jesus? And then she's going after, at least Josephus, I notice she's. And again, her, when one reads her papers, it's filled with pseudo archaeological claims, allegations on her part. So she essentially paints the picture of Joseph as kind of a fraudulent type of character who had stated certain things, but because we know that in that part of the world there's no water there, and Joseph says there was, there was a bank, and he says, so obviously the guy was making things up and is confused. Well, she throws those facile statements and arguments out, again, for the uneducated listener or reader. The fact of the matter is, at the time of Jesus, 2,000 years ago, the topography of the area he was in is not the same as it is today. Rivers dry up, banks of lakes recede, all kinds of changes have taken place. She doesn't tell you that in her narrations. She'll just come to some conclusion based on current evidence or current, topography of the land. And she'll use that as a way to try to discredit the guy. And I point out in my own writings that there were numerous historians who had no connection with Christianity who wrote about had substantial notes or reports, I should say, about this man known as Jesus Christ. One was the Roman historian who wrote the history of Pontius Pilate. Pontius Pilate, is the fellow who was the Roman, protector, not protector, what's the word? He was in charge of the protectorate of Judea, the Roman protectorate. And of course he encountered Christ, and all these conversations that are reported in the Gospels about what Pilate said to Jesus and Jesus' response and the scourging the night before and all these conversations with the scribes and the Pharisees, etc., they were reported by Roman historians. The Roman historians didn't think Jesus was the Son of God or even a deity. He was merely this man. Mm-hmm. But they, because they were historians, it was part of the, the career of Pontius Pilate. So they reported on it. And there are others. There's Greek narratives. There's Greek historians. There's Persian historians. There are many historians from other cultures who had nothing to do with the gospel writers, who were not Christians, who were merely historians of their group, their culture, their society. But because the influence of Jesus was so wide in that part of the world while he was alive, that his narratives about him went as far as India, Japan,
mm-hmm.
England, Spain,
Tibet.
Right,
Nepal,
thank you.
Yeah.
Right, someone of that stature who has such a profound effect, even in the culture of that period, without the telephones and all that, without newspaper,
word of mouth, nevertheless, you know, there are caravans that take goods from one part of the, you know, Middle East to Africa or whatever, you know. Word gets around when someone is of that, you know, has that great an effect on a populace. It would, just, and just to close with this argument, I won't stay on this subject anymore. But what kills me...
No, I'm kidding. No. I'm kidding.
What kills me is people, again, who don't know, and I'm not a historian, this is just stuff I read in high school, in college. I mean, this is just basic, history. I wasn't a scholar. I was, I wasn't a great, big deal student in history, but I certainly remember reading the general history of the period. You know, after Christ left the earth, there was a period of time for, I forget, until maybe 70 AD or so, mm-hmm. in which Romans were not necessarily persecuting Christians. This didn't start the day Christ died. It's because the Christianity movement grew rapidly after Christ left earth, that the Romans increasingly felt this could lead to an overthrow of their power. So they began to persecute Christians in fear of that they were meeting secretly in the catacombs, etc. So they feared the significance of the overthrow of the Roman Empire. At least that was the logical basis behind persecuting it. So the persecution only started gradually. It wasn't an overnight thing, but in time it became ramped up so that, at least to the time of Constantine, there were long periods of time, you know, maybe 200 years on and off, I guess, the severity, in which who knows what the numbers are, but certainly hundreds of thousands of people, if not a million or more, of devoted Christians died, you know, in Roman amphitheaters because they were fed to lions. I mean, people simply don't sacrifice their life, certainly not by the hundreds of thousands, based on a myth.
Mm-hmm.
This woman's logic is so riddled with nonsensical conclusions. No one becomes that devoted to a myth. That's
well, with the exception of warfare. and we have that going on in two countries right now as we speak. So
anyway, I'll drop this subject. I just wanted to mention it. This is the date we celebrate. And it's not important if it's the actual date that Christ was born. Not important at all. Completely insignificant to the notion of celebrating the birth of a high spiritual teacher who came to earth and assisted a large percentage or the large bulk of humanity to get away from the dog-eat-dog mentality that they were accustomed to, and to start thinking about being loving instead of selfish and greedy and just self-serving, to be caring, loving, sharing, forgiving. This is the importance of the earthly mission of Jesus Christ. It's to teach these lessons, the Beatitudes that were taught on the Mount, etc. This is the importance of Jesus. It's not significant whether you are become a Christian or you subscribe to church dogma about Jesus being the Son of God and all that. That's not why we believe in defending the historical reality of Jesus. It's mm-hmm. because of his message, and it's the message that the Illuminati wants to destroy.
Mm-hmm.
And so, using people like this woman to, as you say, she's on the front line of this psyops.
Yeah.
Okay, so...
Well, you know, and just going along with this, and I'm going to kind of steer it slightly or tweak it in a different direction, if I may do so, and it's my show, so I think I can do that. but I'm doing it with your agreement, of course. The concept of the, let's use a TV evangelist and think back over the past 10, 15 years. We had Jim Baker and this scandal with Jessica Hahn. That was likely, looking back at it, it was likely a psyops just to see how people were going to react to these characters that millions of people are giving hundreds of millions of dollars to annually, and now they've been compromised, and so now they can use that individual for their purposes, yet the event itself was that act. In other words, now you have people stopping their donations or changing their ideas about Christianity. First of all, they were not given a true Christian message. They were given this perverted message, and then these guys that are holier than thou are, you know, they're on TV blasting everybody as sinners, yeah, not worthy, and, you know, yeah. And so it causes someone who would be a true Christian, if they heard the truth, to turn away from Christianity, even though someone started that religion. Jesus never asked anyone to start a religion.
Very important point, yep.
Okay, so let's look at all of that in the context. It doesn't matter who this other person might be, male or female, what the name is, what the alias is. It's quite obvious that there's a game being played. Whether they write a book, whether they put articles or post something on an internet blog, doesn't matter. Or if they come out with a DVD or a YouTube or a Google video, it really doesn't matter. It's all part of the same thing. What makes this one person an expert over everything that everyone else said? I mean, what her message or his message or its message is contradictory to everything else that's out there, with the exception of showing some Nazi films, some Nazi clips, as if that is supposed to cause us to feel a certain way. There's a movie called The Eternal Jew that one can get just by Googling that name. And it's actually downloadable, and it's a Nazi propaganda movie attacking all the Jewish people, and it's the voiceover that's doing all of this. They show poor people living, let's say, Russian Jews, for example. They're in the home filming these people, and they're describing flies. They show some flies, and that. Now, because they say the house is fly-ridden, that these people, these Russian Jews, didn't care to keep a clean house. They're filthy people. They're less than the Aryans.
Yes.
They're less than the Nazis. They're to be punished. They're to be not taken for, not on the same level, in other words. They're trash, basically. And that's what this whole movie does, is it trashes them.
Right. Thank you for reminding me. If you're talking about the one that I've seen clips of, it was made in the 30s, and Nazi propaganda film. Mm-hmm. And it shows, as you say, poor people, Jewish people, and because of the conditions that they filmed it, if it's the same one I remember there were scenes in which they show a lot of rats. Mm-hmm. Running like from alleyways and garbage, and they want the viewer to couple the idea of the Jew and rats, you know, vermin, pestilence. We have to, you know, you get rid of pests. You don't tolerate them. You exterminate them because that's the way you know. So I have not seen the whole thing, but I've seen clips of it in the past, and I know exactly what you're talking about.
Well, they actually imply that these people are lazy.
Yes,
and,
exactly.
And you know, it doesn't really matter if these people are Jewish or they're from Kenya or wherever they're being attacked by flies, or they're showing a picture of flies in one, and then they edit it and now they're inside the house And now you're to believe that these people are just sitting there swatting flies or not even paying attention to the flies because they're lazy. They're not hardworking. They don't have ethics. All they do is pray, and they even mock that.
Yes.
So it's definitely a propaganda movie, yep. And it's so obvious that it's really like watching TV here in the United States. There's really not much difference. Mm-hmm. It's not quite so obvious to the average person as to what's being said and what's being going on because they're so wrapped up in the moment that they're not hearing the neuro-linguistic programming and they're not hearing the talking points and all the little subtle or subconscious signals that are being broadcast. And so there's really no difference between that and this movie that goes back 70 years or more, almost 80 years. It's pretty revealing, but I bring that up just for the purpose of pointing out the extremes of the propaganda and that it doesn't matter who the person is, they have to bring somebody out on the internet to debunk everybody.
Yep.
And one of the keys to this, and if you're wondering, when you're on a site, you can research the domain. Anyone can research the domain. I heard something on a radio commercial, and they said, "Or just go to marines.com." So I researched that site, and before I actually clicked to the button to take me to the place where I can gather some information about that domain, I said to myself, "I'll bet any money it's going to say Network Solutions." Now that's a company. It's just a company. It's a company name. But who runs it is one thing, and who their clients are is another. But all the spam, all the phishing emails, all the intrusions into your privacy, 9 times out of 10 will lead you to Network Solutions. And I put marines.com in there, and it took me to Network Solutions. And there's a guy out of Chicago. Now, this is the Marines. You would think it would show Washington, D.C. or something like that. There's a guy in Chicago whose name comes up.
Hmm.
So that we have ways, using the technology, there are ways to back your intuition or your discernment that something is not right, something doesn't feel right. Who's running this? Who's in charge of this? This is how we get our sovereignty back, is by being aware of what is actually being done, because there are people thinking these things out, planning these things out, as you pointed out. You even gave them a collective name that they like to call themselves. So that said, what else is on your mind these days?
Well, I would like to mention something that I've noted of late. It has to do with, let me just quickly mention about chemtrail spraying activity has increased substantially in my area here,
mm-hmm.
in Southern California, probably in the last 2 months. I noticed that much of the summer, there would be long periods, 3, 4, 5, 6 weeks, in which I typically go out, take a look at the sky when I first go out in the morning, I'll look in the afternoon, early afternoon, mid-afternoon, late afternoon, and just as the sun's going down, just to quickly scan to see, are there chemtrails being sprayed? For many weeks, I would not see a chemtrail. We just had so many wonderful days of blue skies, deep blue skies. It was so nice, because I did notice when they did spray, even lightly, we'd get an armada of sylphs would come in, and they tended to neutralize them very quickly. So I was asking myself, well, presumably they're spraying in areas in which their sylph activity is either non-existent or much reduced, so that the chemtrail, fallout, the poisons can have some effect. At least it seemed logical to me. Okay, long story short, somewhere around late October, I noticed daily chemtrail sprays had picked up again. You know, I'm sad to see that. But sylphs typically come in so that by mid-afternoon, even if they were spraying all morning, even by noon or 1 o'clock, it was solid overcast. Still by 3:30 or 4, the sylphs had pretty much cleaned up the sky. So I always take pictures every single day when I see it. I have a large, very large catalog of pictures that I have not put on my website simply because, not that I don't want to, I have fabulous shots of the most extraordinary looking sylphs. It's just the time factor. I haven't had sufficient. But I just want to mention what I've noticed in the last 5 days, from about December 20th up to, well, let's say the 23rd, because it was raining quite strongly on the 24th and a little bit today. But there was 3 days, December 20 through 23, in which we had very heavy spraying, so much so that the sun could not really be seen through the spray. You would see this glowing disc, white disc, but the spray was so heavy it essentially has obscured the sun, and you can only see the outline of the sun and, you know, the disc itself, but you couldn't see the rays of the sun. It was that heavy. But at the same time, so I took pictures of all this because I haven't seen that heavy spraying here in actually years. The last time I saw that heavy spraying was around 2002, perhaps. However, the sylphs came in, and oh my God, not only are the sylphs very dramatic, very large, and exquisite, you know, beautiful shapes, but I began to import them into Photoshop, and I start to look for these etheric images, which are always there if you merely hunt for them. Sometimes they're just spectacular, they're so remarkable, and other times they're light, so that it's hard to see very sharp detail, but nevertheless you see enough of an outline that you can. So I just wanted to mention that I'm going to be putting it up in the next day or two, some of these just remarkable images, many of them human looking faces, very distinct hairlines, mustaches, just remarkable detail to these faces. Some of them quite large, other than smaller in appearance, but just remarkable what's going on here. So I mentioned this to you a bit on the phone earlier today as to what are these images that accompany the overall structure that we're calling a sylph. Now, there's no question that sylphs are overlaying chemtrail sprayings, transmuting the toxic elements to neutralize them, and after the transmutation takes place, they form what I call transmuted cloud formations. That if there's enough chemtrails, you have a lot of transmuted clouds, so they form into transmuted cloud banks. I record that every single day in the spraying takes place. And the transformation is remarkably fast. It used to be, in earlier years when I noticed sylphs around 2004, it seemed to take many hours for this change to take place. But now it seems to happen, you'll have an obscure, overcast sky of chemtrails, and it seems that in a short a period of time of 30 minutes, you have perhaps 60-70% of the sky that is now turned blue. You can see the blue sky. You see these transmuted cloud banks, and you see these huge sylphs scattered over the entire skyscape over you. It's just amazing.
Now, we had spraying over our area today. We had, now this is Christmas, okay?
Yeah.
We had a big X in the sky.
Yes.
They like to put that X. Of course, that's the symbol for Satan.
The satanic X, right.
Yes. And so they start with an X, and I saw that, and I called the Sylphs. Meanwhile, there's five or six other planes now up there and at different altitudes.
Yes.
And spraying in different directions. So they're probably following wind patterns up in the jet stream. And some were high and some were lower. One was kind of interesting. It looked like it had been flying at a very low altitude, out of view, and then all of a sudden there was a 45-degree angle, and then it leveled off. It didn't have a curvature to it. So the person was changing altitude and definitely following a flight plan. So
right.
I called the Sylphs when I saw the first X, and then I started calling them to work on the other ones. And by the time I put my eyes back on the original X, it was already disappearing completely. So, and it was in the stage where it was beginning to expand. You know how they sit out there for a while,
and then it just starts expanding. Feather out, right.
And sometimes it only takes 5 or 10 minutes for it to completely become overcast.
Right, that's right.
So it was kind of interesting to watch this. They were up there wasting their time.
Yeah, so let me echo that sentiment too, since we've talked about it in other chats on your show, but I'll say it again. We are every human being is a creative individual, and I don't mean that in the abstract sense. I mean that by applying your intentions, your thoughts, coupled with an emotional charge, let's call it, we can create or we can change reality with our thoughts. And by calling in the Sylphs as you're doing, of course, anybody can do this. You just have to apply yourself and do it. Plenty of people have reported, sent me emails in which they've have done just what you said. Some people make little rhymes up to call in Sylphs, and the idea is set your intention, which means your desire, as a request, and couple it with some energy. Now you could the emotion you can use is through the heart. You can couple it with, you know, love of the planet, love of the animals and people on this planet to live in a, you know, to breathe free of toxins and poisons and all the garbage that materials that they're putting into the chemtrail spray in order to harm us and compromise our immune system and set us up for what they're hoping is going to be a wide scale genocide effect.
The Greeks were aware of the Sylphs. They gave them that name. So what do you think was going on back then that they were aware of Sylphs?
Well, of course, the Greeks did not isolate the world of science in the metaphysical world. If you read Greek historians, if you read their philosophers, if you read by physicians like Paracelsus, they embraced the notion that the spirit world, if let's call it that, just to refer to these higher vibrational energies, and the physical world were one and the same. And they recognized that one melded into the other, and they certainly didn't divorce themselves as Western society did in the beginning of the 20th century. The changeover came about with the promotion of the theories of Albert Einstein, 1905-1915. The embracing of his theories of relativity and so forth essentially turned the entire establishment belief structure towards a materialist or a material-only reality. In other words, if you couldn't hold it or in your hand or see it under a microscope, it didn't exist. And in even up to the late 19th century, the beginning of the 20th century, what was accepted belief in every university around the world was the existence of what we call the ether. And this notion was embraced by the very best scientists of their day. I'm talking about Lord Kelvin, for instance. The biggest names in science, Nikola Tesla, etc., late 19th century, all believed, ascribed to, and wrote about, as a matter of fact, the ether.
Mm-hmm.
And this whole notion of the ether was simply thrown out by academia because of the, let's say, the dominance of influence of the Einstein model. So that certainly by the 1920s and the 30s, the notion of an ether was completely dismissed. The ether was recognized by the ancient Greeks.
Mm-hmm.
For instance, so here you have a more than 2,000 years, because you know the high point of Greek society, you know, was, I don't know, 500 BC in that range. So Homer and all that. It seems to me that you know, this material view of the universe, the Einstein model, completely took over academic dogma, let's say, for the entire 20th century. So people going to college, so I never heard the word ether mentioned when I was in college, never. Or high school, I didn't even know existed until I came out here to California and I started to find out about people on Bob Beck, started to find out about Borderlands and started getting some of those books, and oh my God, it was such a thrill to find out about. Well, first, Tesla's work was enormous, but I had no idea. So this information was suppressed, taken out of the history books, certainly taken out of textbooks, so we don't know, we aren't taught anything about it. But so getting back to your original thought about what did the ancient Greeks, well, the ancient Greeks could see with their eyes, and rather than have belief systems which over, or let's say I should say propaganda or brainwashing, override what their eyes are telling them, they simply accepted what their eyes were delivering. Well, you and I know, or anybody who studies the photographs, for instance, sylphs, the structure of these energy forms are so unique, there's no way you can call them clouds because they take on the appearance of something that's entirely far too sophisticated, far too detailed, far too artistic in appearance to be, quote, a cloud.
Yeah, and there's an element of personality in there, too.
Yes.
I'm sure you'd agree. This clown that we saw wearing a hat and having a smile on his head or face and basically seeing the whole shape of the head, the ears, the eyes, the nose, the mouth, the chin, sometimes very pronounced, the neck, sometimes even wearing full clothes. Yes, or having a beard. We have one that I'm still holding the crops you sent me on that. It's amazing the detail. It's in color, even.
Yes. It is amazing, and I'm as amazed as anyone that in seeing these images. I think I mentioned in other talks we've had about this. I don't take credit for any of this. I'm no expert on the computer. I never was. I just learned by trial and error, and I had a few people teach me a few things. So I've been stumbling in that regard from the very beginning. As far as using Photoshop, someone installed it on my computer for me, and I was reading the fabulous website of a woman named Barbara Krause Brown, who has a very important website called WeolawaPress.com, in which she takes photographs and enlarges them in Photoshop and photo contrast enhance them and can reveal incredible information in the photo. So that's what gave me the idea to even attempt trying to take these pictures of sylphs and expand them, enlarge them, and then adjust the contrast by just trial and error. I've never learned how to use Photoshop. I just looked at the toolbox and just picked things and saw what happened. Strictly, you know, peck and click type of guy. But gradually you sort of learn what tools do what filters do what, etc. And by drawing the contrast to try to draw it out to ever greater degree, these faces, which maybe only appear in the original photograph as the faintest outline, the very faintest outline, suddenly by playing with the contrast adjustment can come up rather sharp. It's simply amazing what shows up. And then, as you say, you see these visages of many of them human-looking faces, many of them, some of them recognizable animal faces, sea creatures, land animals. Some of them look like easy to recognize
wolves,
animals.
Yeah.
A horse, a bull, a stag, a dog. I've seen a number of pictures that look exactly like a deer, perhaps some sort of a squirrel, a chipmunk type looking face. And then you have another large percentage of, quote, we'll call them faces, that seem somewhat cartoonish, very strange.
Yeah.
Some look distorted, sort of a gnarled type of face. Looks more like, let's say, a gargoyle, perhaps a combination of animal features and human features. Have no idea what that is, but that's, you know, that's... And then others sort of look alien, rather unusual to... But they do have some recognizable structures, two eyes, some sort of chin, jaw structure, usually some kind of mouth, some sort of nose.
Some kind structure. Of ear, usually, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, ear, that sort of thing. But the human-looking faces, well, when you see this latest crop that I just grabbed, you'll see what I mean. Some of these faces, they almost look like a portrait that could be on your mantle. Of your Uncle Benny, you know?
I know.
I mean, hairline,
yeah.
Mustache, teeth, everything. It's just phenomenal.
Well, the one that probably sticks out most in my mind, just because of the detail, it sort of looks like this old image of a cobbler that you have, where the guy's head is bald, but he's got white hair around... the side of his head and in the back, and it looks like he's wearing he's got a full beard, and it looks like he's wearing a vest, and you know, it looks real Middle Ages. You picture a cobblestone sidewalk, and
yes,
that it's that period, that character,
yes.
Almost a
right.
Victorian type of
right.
of a laborer's.
Right.
And then we have this dichotomy of this also in negative events, too. The ground zero area from 9/11 had many of these figures in the smoke, but they were not anything like what you're describing.
No, they're definitely more of a demonic character appearance.
Yeah.
Yes.
And then we've also seen that in those shots where we inverted the night sky in the proximity of two flying saucers.
Yes, right.
And it not only brought out the light that was traveling between the two craft, which we determined was a communication going on, a transfer of data, it exposed this matrix of or a pattern of these entities, and
yes,
and they resemble the entities that we see on reptilians too, on the shapeshifters.
Yes, right.
So
yes,
it's totally different source of energy.
Yes, but
and the use of energy.
Yeah, right. But this is a remarkable scientific phenomena that you would think, if people who truly love science, if they could only be exposed to this, I find it hard to believe. I'm a person who has been fascinated by science all my life. I can't imagine people being bored by scientific phenomena. It's so interesting to examine science phenomena, but we have something that's simply brand new in terms of, you know, recognition by unknown to the general public, and I'm putting these pieces up, and it's amazing how so few people are aware of that this phenomenon is taking place, and I wonder if in the years to come, as more people accidentally trip upon these articles in which we examine these entities associated with the sylphs, associated with reptilian shapeshifters like Barack Obama, etc., if it will not finally dawn on a large percentage of people who have the eyes to see and the ears to hear, say, oh my God, this is a remarkable thing that we've... Anybody can do this. After all, chemtrails are being sprayed in most parts of, you know, North America and in Europe and et cetera. So sylphs are showing up pretty much in most areas where chemtrails are. And just get a digital camera and take pictures and enter those pictures into your Photoshop and start playing around. Magnify the shot and look around. Simply look for these images. They're there. And anybody could do this. And why thousands and thousands of people don't jump on this immediately, I don't understand. To me, if I had the time, I would spend a lot of time perusing these photos and cropping out these images.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's remarkable. It's so fascinating.
I've got a whole collection of photos that I took recently that I'm going to be posting pretty soon, and yeah. I can see and anyone that looks at these photos will see that there are sylphs. When you see how the chemtrail is not only being dispersed, it's being eliminated.
Yes,
and I'll share those with you. Also, one does not have to invest in Photoshop to see this if they have a picture viewer and they have the capacity to zoom in on the photo. You can zoom in where yes. You think there may be something strange going on. Just go by your feeling. Right. And you will, after a little bit of careful study, you will see some images that are there. We have a tendency to look at the whole forest.
Yes,
and we're trying to just see a tree.
Exactly, that's an important point for people who are interested in what we're talking about. There are some instances in which the image, whether it's of an animal, a bird, for instance, or even a human head, sometimes it is so large, it's as big as the sylph itself. Sometimes it's just humongous.
Yes.
It might occupy, who knows, a 25 or 30 degree arc of the sky. It could be that large, but that's rare. Usually, if you take this photo with a digital camera that has a high pixel count to it, when you enter the photo, if you can see the image size, it'll be, let's say, 3,000 pixels wide by 3,500 pixels high, for instance. There's a lot of pixels there. So if you click on the function that you display the actual pixels, then it's now has enlarged to its full size. And you can scroll left, right, or up, down around the picture and see the detail there. And then you can magnify that. If you see something small, then you can crop it out, which is the way I normally do it, and then magnify it, increase its size by 50, 100, 200, 300, 500, 1,000%, whatever it takes to try to get the image to come up so that you can recognize it.
Mm-hmm.
As, you know, and then I adjust the contrast to make the object, you know, stand out more from the background.
Yeah. And it's not, I can clearly say that doing that is not with the intention of creating this image. It's facilitating seeing the image that's there.
That's exactly right. I've had a few people email me.
You had one expert.
I had a guy who was very disparaging about the work because he in his arrogance and in his lack of understanding and knowledge on the subject, erroneously jumped to the conclusion that I'm magnifying noise. Now, anyone who has any sort of, you know, familiarity with photography or with electronics is familiar with the concept of noise. So that in photography, if you have a picture that is a very low resolution, that means that there isn't a lot of fine detail captured in the photo. So when you enlarge a photo of low resolution, the image begins to blur out because you can only magnify it up to a certain point in which the image will mm-hmm. still appear to be in focus, and then the focus goes out increasingly. So this guy imagined that I was beginning with low resolution shots to begin with, and then by magnifying them such a large degree, I was amplifying noise, in that he was very disparaging towards me, and, you know, kind of in a mocking way, you know, like, you know, what are you doing type of thing, you know, you're just amplifying noise. Well, what that fellow didn't understand is that we're dealing with an unconventional phenomena here. We're capturing on digital photographs energy forms that are normally unseen by the naked eye in, let's say, normal times. These are abnormal times. We're seeing some sort of etheric energy there. Now, we're seeing photos, pictures that emerge that look like human faces in many cases, a very detailed human faces. It is not possible to amplify noise, which is just a random series of shapes. It's not possible, and then when you amplify that, to wind up with an image that looks, has all the organization, sophistication, and detail of a human face.
Yeah, or
that's
the
not
order.
Possible.
Yes, exactly.
Yet this clown with his arrogance is scoffing at me and berating me for, you know, because I'm too stupid to understand that I'm amplifying noise.
Yeah, and he was also, if I remember correctly, an instructor at a local community college.
Right, community college in Photoshop. So he knows what he's talking about, and he's, you know, wants me to know that I don't know any. I have no idea what I'm talking about because he teaches Photoshop at a community college.
Well, you know, we have the same parallel in audio production, as you know. If you record something at a very low sampling rate, which is parallel to what you described as a lower resolution, let's say 11K, and then you try to extract a wider or a higher frequency, let's say 18K or 24K or 96K, really doesn't matter. Anything above 11K, you are going to magnify the frequencies where noise will appear. Now,
Right. That
it's not, the noise is not necessarily there at that point, but as soon as you try to bring it up to a workable frequency, workable meaning able to be burned to a CD or DVD, as an example, to be able to store it in some type of medium, because not all, or media, because not all media will support 11K. It's a very low frequency. You will hear the muffled sound, because it's 11K can't record the high frequency. It sounds very restrictive, as if you put a towel over the microphone before you record it.
The music. Sampling rate, yeah.
Yeah, it's called the sampling rate.
Right.
And then you have a phenomenon that occurs in an analog to digital and digital to analog converter that allows us to take analog sound, which anything going in the mic is, and then bringing it out of the digital realm where it can be understood as analog sound. Why? Because we hear with analog ears.
Right.
You can eliminate some artifacts depending on what's called the oversampling frequency. And that's in the processors that I just described. That's not occurring in real time as something you can hear. However, if it's not done properly, you hear the result. If oversampling frequency is not high enough, then that when that is brought back down into the hearing range, there will still be artifacts of noise. And you can't make better sound out of the noise. You can eliminate the noise, giving it the appearance that the sound is cleaner than it is. But you can't really, other than adding sibilance, in other words, boosting certain frequencies, we have that ability. You can do that with Photoshop, too.
Yes.
You can change the level of the red or the hue.
Yes.
From red to green, or bring out more blue, or change the contrast, or the exposure, or the sharpness. There are a lot of things that program allows you to do. It
yep.
even allows you to invert everything, where whatever is black becomes white, and whatever was white is black, making it look like a negative.
Right.
But that's not what we're trying to do for the purpose of creating something that couldn't be there. The same thing applies.
Right.
And so the people that want to challenge this because of a lack of knowledge would do better to pay attention to what we're talking about. They might learn something to teach in that community college.
Right. I do address that person. I typically call them knee-jerk skeptics because of schooling, because of, let's say, common exposure that they've seen or heard. They believe that their acquired view of reality is the only view of reality.
Mm-hmm.
Therefore, when you present something that is outside of their acquired knowledge base, it can't be, because they haven't read about it, they haven't studied, they haven't heard of it. Therefore, according to the knee-jerk skeptic, it cannot exist, because I have not learned about it. I don't have knowledge of it. Therefore, it doesn't exist. It's the arrogance coupled with the ignorance of skeptics really drive me up the wall. I find skeptics as a group who respond with this typical skeptical disbelief, mocking reaction are almost never intelligent people. They're very addle-brained, half-baked individuals who, loaded with ego, loaded with self-confidence about who and their ability, but very, very short on experience and true knowledge. Because anyone who's become serious about studying science, the first thing you do is you abandon the notion that you know it all. You have to simply be like a student and be open to information.
Mm-hmm.
And no matter how outside of it is, from what you've seen or heard of, it's a mistake. It's a sign of ignorance. It's a sign of less intelligence to simply react negatively to a brand new postulate. The intelligent thing to do is just sit down, shut up, listen, digest the material, and then start thinking, probing, researching. But to just stand up and say, can't be, no, that's impossible. No, that's a foolish individual.
I give you credit for posting that. You know, you don't have to post these. These emails are sent to you, and you have the choice to to do that.
I'm aware of that. Very many people would not do what I do, would not post the comments of critics, skeptics, scoffers, etc. I do because I see the value in, let's say, challenging them and throwing it back in their face.
Yeah. Now, I had a guy do that to me with those photos that I posted, which were taken from a chopper on 9/11. And the guy tells me there was no, or the reason for these photos were not because of a military chopper that was taking the photos. It was a news crew that got special permission from the politicians to go out there and take those photos.
Right.
Now, and it was blamed on Jesus, by the way, 9/11. This individual, if you remember, because I posted a response. I actually took the time to write a response to that, what I saw as an idiot. We had the whole military on stand down. They couldn't even get a jet up there, right? Well, they didn't need to scramble any jets because there were no jets.
There was no attacker. There was just the military involved in the event.
But this guy knew that the politicians who were totally out of control, even more than the military that was there doing exercises that morning, gave this news crew special permission. Of course, I asked the guy what the news crew was, what the source of his information was,
and
I pointed out clearly that that he had actually blamed this on Jesus. It's mind-boggling the way people will try to debunk something that's quite obvious. All I did was post photos. All I did was describe what is in the photos, and you yourself, Ken, have seen those.
Oh, yes.
There are photos of historical figures and very large heads like you were describing, or heads coming out of heads, out of heads.
Yep. Yeah. What you mean by that is that with these etheric images that emerge from, in the case that I was the smoke of the 9/11, the World Trade Center building collapses, the many of these images were seen in the smoke. And as with the sylphs, these etheric images tend to be part of the same face. So they seem to merge, blend. It's a very strange phenomenon. Not all of them. Some of them, in fact, a substantial portion of them are standalone faces, but there are a certain amount of these faces that seem to have other faces blended in with a larger face, so that if you were to isolate, let's say, what might look like the eye, when you enlarge it, it might be a completely...
It's a whole nother figure, yeah. It's
a
like
whole
the,
other figure.
It's like the airbrush work of Hans Giger, is how I would describe it.
You have the larger overall image that, let's say, might look like a human face or an animal.
And you move in closer.
Yeah. You move in closer to the sections. That itself is made up of faces of animals, humans, gargoyles, cartoonish. This is why I mention this is a brand new phenomena that we're just, I just tripped upon, and it's really so fascinating.
It makes you wonder if Hans Giger actually sees those. And, I met him many years ago and actually stood in a room We both had the same business manager. And I stood in a room which he had done all the walls with a mural. Yeah. And it was of course, he was haunted by the death of his wife, who committed suicide.
Yes.
And her face was in all these things. The the background for the movie Alien was designed by Giger, and it's taken from his work. The group Emerson, Lake, and Palmer used a lot of his artwork. And he had even done a piece for me, but it was so far removed from the essence of the music, I didn't use it for the album cover, but I still kept it.
Yeah.
And it's that kind of artwork. It's acknowledging what we're describing. That's the point I'm making, is that probably he had the vision to see this, or at least the creative imagination to contemplate that as a possibility.
Yes.
And you can see what looks like the engine room or something in a spacecraft, but you get closer, you would see the image of his wife.
Wow.
And inside that image, again, another image of his wife, and on, much like the reflection you get when you take a hand mirror and put it up in front of a wall mirror and change the angle, and you see countless, endless mirrors because the reflection keeps going on.
Right. It's sort of, yes. It's. By the way, since we're mentioning names, I mentioned Barbara Krause Brown as being the inspiration to get me to even use Photoshop. But there's another gal who emailed me, it must have been 3 or 4 years ago now. Her name is Jane Tripp, T-R-I-P-P, and she has done very fascinating work in photography. Apparently, fourth-dimensional entities, she's able to see them. She's able to see auras. And when she takes a photograph of, let's say, a forested area, many, many fourth-dimensional entities will show up in the photograph. Some of them look like aliens. Others are elementals, forest elementals.
Mm-hmm.
But she, too, has said in her writings and in talking with her on the phone, what you just said.
Really?
As you go deep, absolutely. Paralleled exactly what you just said. As you look into a shot of, let's say, some sort of entity, might look like a human, as you keep on zooming in and enlarging, there's entities within entities within entities. It's this is a characteristic of this window on the fourth dimension. We're viewing some sort of window that obviously we can, and it's manifesting itself in these sylph clouds. They're using the material probably, because usually in what I notice is if it's a clear blue day and they don't spray, I don't see sylph show up. We might get natural clouds, you know, cumulus clouds that are formed, stratocumulus, etc. Natural cloud formations, but the only time, frankly, I see sylphs is when they do spray, so they come out. But sylphs take on this incredibly sophisticated artistic forms. And how are they manifesting that? I don't know. Are they using the transmuted residue from the chemtrails? Probably.
Mm-hmm.
Do they have the ability to, let's say, cause moisture to collate or, you know, form in a way that whatever is the their aura, the energy signature of the aura, that these... that they can manifest a cloud form that we see as white cloud. I don't know. I have no idea. But you can certainly see the sylph.
There's something going on a quantum level for sure.
Yes. Right. Right.
And they're probably in that realm. Plus, you know what we're describing. It's like when I described the mirror. If you hold a mirror in front of another mirror. And you look into the first mirror, let's say you look into the wall mirror, and you, if you're holding it a certain way, there will be but one reflection, and you'll see one mirror. But as soon as you change the angle,
yes, correct,
then you see the reflection take on more times.
Yep.
And the fourth dimension is a dimension of time. So there's a similar phenomenon going on there on a quantum level. No one seems to question bending light rays with a mirror and the effects that it produces. We just take it for granted that that's what happens.
Yeah.
But when we see it happen somewhere else where things may be operating slightly under slightly different rules or laws, natural laws, that because we see it differently doesn't mean, or because we don't understand it, doesn't mean it doesn't happen. Or that those that share that information are crazy.
Yes, exactly.
You know.
We're getting back to our community college Photoshop expert again.
Yes.
His attitude embraced the notion that you're just pointing out something that we should, you know, amplify a bit. What I found in studying Tesla and other famous scientists who understood and utilized the ether physics to gain, you know, some discovery or some new avenue of science information based on ether physics. In almost all cases, ether physics operates at 180 degree reversal to third dimension physics. So everything that we're accustomed to in third dimension physics, when you try to apply the same dot example, I'll just give one small example. In third dimensional physics, we can create a motor, an internal combustion engine, for instance, by exploding gasoline in a cylinder, spark plug and all that, and it causes a crankshaft to turn around, and we can propel an automobile, an airplane, a boat, etc., with this force. Okay, that's third dimension physics. In ether physics, we have also a way to develop a motive force. And however, one way it's done, Victor Schauberger discovered, is through, rather than an explosion of a gasoline vapor inside, we can have the opposite movement. We can have an implosion. Now, many many media many types of media can experience implosion. You can have implosion of air. You can have implosion of water. Okay, actually, you can have implosion of all the earth, air, fire. You know, all the
gas. Yeah.
Exactly. Okay. When you experience implosion, one of the byproducts is you get a motive force. So you can propel an automobile, a boat, airplane, etc. But rather than getting an expansion of heat, which normally accompanies ignition and combustion, you get just the opposite. You get an inversion of heat, which is called cooling. So, as an example, the article I put on my website around 1998 called the Joe Energy Cell is a type of water cell that this fellow in Australia named Joe happened, tripped upon, serendipitously discovered, would have an implosive effect and produce a type of byproduct, a gas, that when utilized within a internal combustion engine would experience implosion and you'd get a motive force. The car would take off like a rocket, but the engine actually, rather than getting hot, would get cooler. And for instance, if you had antifreeze in the cooling system, it would get so cool that, you know, if you didn't have enough antifreeze in there, the radiator would actually ice up. Schauberger noticed this as well. He found out that in an explosion process, you got a cooling effect down to, was it plus 4 degrees or minus 4 degrees, being the ideal temperature where the maximum amount of energy exchange takes place when you're dealing with an implosion system. All right, so what I'm getting at is that, unlike the guy from the community college Photoshop instruction department, he's making his assumptions based on third-dimensional physics, in which he's calling me crazy or laughing at me or scoffing at what I'm doing, because his expectations are based on, quote, the rules of third-dimensional physics. Well, we're dealing with a phenomena that's taking place right in the borderlands between the third and fourth dimension. Do not assume that the rules that apply to third-dimensional physics now hold true with fourth-dimensional phenomena.
Let me make a point before we sign off here, too, Ken, because we are out of time. But let me make a point, and this is that this argument comes up, why? Because of photograph, right, that you published. And it comes up because there happens to be a computer software that allows you to edit or manipulate this in a way that makes it more visible, more apparent. That's all you're doing.
That's all.
Let's not forget the naked eye, because I have been in the presence of other people where these things were so huge, they were bigger than the major league ballpark we were sitting in.
Yes, I remember. Yes.
Okay, it was larger than that.
Yes.
And it was miles up in the sky, and everyone saw it. And it didn't matter that we had a photograph of it or not.
Right.
We didn't need it. And there was no pixelation occurring. And I don't think anybody there, other than me, no, actually there were two people there that had some teaching experience. And actually, I taught at a community college. But so I can refute his community college class on art by what I saw with my naked eyes and everyone else, including another college professor. So now there may have been more. I would presume these were just run-of-the-mill ballpark fans, baseball fans. What we all saw in the sky with our naked eye was exactly what we saw in the pictures. The difference is we didn't have to look at a photo. It was right over our heads.
Right, right, right.
And there were more than one. But one particular, it looked like a human face.
Yep.
And it was looking in terms of the position we were sitting, it was looking towards the southwest. and everyone saw it.
Yep.
And I asked people to describe, what do you see? And I see a face. This face has hair. And the head has hair. The forehead is rather large. It has eyebrows, very bushy eyebrows. And it has a big nose, sort of a bulbous nose. Everybody gave the same description.
Yes.
And it came immediately when we called it.
Yes.
So much for his Photoshop class.
Yeah.
We can see these things on video too. You made these stills from a video that you had taken. So there's no trickery involved here. Right. The amount of money you have to pay for that type of equipment is enormous.
Well, to try to fake it, yeah.
First
you need knowledge of how to stage all this, but then the money, and then would be large, and then the time.
The knowledge of, you know, the experience.
Yeah, and then above all, why would anyone do that? I mean, what's the point? I mean, I'm running a website. I'm trying to put up information. I trip upon something I happened to notice from the photographs, because I began to look hard at the photos from the time I started noticing chemtrails. I think I noticed chemtrails in the winter of 97-98 for the first time.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Why? What's happening? Merry Christmas. Well, folks, we just had our sound man just join in our conversation. And he wants to extend a Merry Christmas to everyone, so I guess that's his nice way of letting us know we're out of time, Ken.
Yes, we'll have to just continue on another...
We'll have to pick up on the new year. You're actually scheduled to be with us on January 1st.
Yes, that's wonderful. Yeah.
New Year's Day, so...
Yep.
Looking forward to that visit, and this was interesting. Just to close here, we do have to end this. I want to encourage people to go to your website, educate-yourself.org, and you have a whole section on chemtrails and silts. You've got articles in your current news, I think, or your latest articles section. Of course, they can search on your site, can they not? Or
yes, they can. The way I recommend people to search, I have a note on current news, is that go to either Google or scroogle.org, either one will work, and in quotation marks, put in educate-yourself.org in quotation, then put a plus sign in whatever you're looking for, you know, word, subject, after the plus sign, and whatever articles on my website that include that word, that list will pop up. So that's the easiest way to search my site, is to use Google or Scroogle in order to, you know, find. That's the way I search my own site. Yeah. It's the fastest way to
And I featured some of these photos. Actually, there are many of these photos and crops on my website, Direct Light Productions.
Yes. .com,
and at the top there's a page that says chemtrails. Just click on that, and there's a story about how Ken captured these shots, what he was doing that day, and then the crops that we made. We were actually looking at these together in real time, discussing what they were.
Yeah, that's a good page to go to because, frankly, I haven't put that page up on my own site yet. So the only place they can see those shots are on your site. So
you haven't put my Obama piece on your site either.
Yes, I've got to do that. So I'm sorry, of the holiday friends being over. So.
No, I know. I understand that.
No, you're doing very successful with it. You got a tremendous amount of hits.
In 1 week, actually, I think I got as many hits as in months. On the other pieces.
All the other article parts combined,
I suppose it's because people are waking up and discovering that things are not, they're not changing like they thought they would.
Yes, exactly.
In fact,
change, right.
there's a photo of Barack Obama holding a phone backwards. It's a landline, and you can
see. I saw that photo,
Okay, I posted that on a site, and I just gave it the title in quotes. The word change with a question mark. And the photo speaks for the rest of it.
Yeah.
It was also interesting, there's another individual in that room sitting on the floor. So obviously, they were either short of chairs or... Everybody was in another dimension when that photo was shot. I don't know how else to describe it.
It like George Bush with the goat book upside down. He's reading to the class.
Oh yeah,
hilarious how the universe provides us with these photos and these captions. Mm-hmm. It's just
and now you know that that's a topic. It's very similar to reverse speech, and it may be something worth discussing.
Yes.
I think if you post my part 5 of the Three Stooges Go to Washington on your website, then that opens the door for that discussion. Maybe the next time, there are more anomalies coming out in real time, and Larry Sinclair wrote a very nice piece about. His call to the Dunham residents in Hawaii.
Okay.
So we could talk about some of that and some of these other things. We can even throw the sylphs in there. Why not?
Right. Yep.
So maybe we can call the sylphs out for Barack Obama. Maybe.
Yeah.
Maybe that's the thing to do. Well, in any event, I want to wish you a Merry Christmas, and also everyone at BBS Radio, Don Newsome, for working on this special day. Thanks go to Don for making Evident Footprints possible and for running the sound and even for interrupting our conversation tonight. He enjoyed that. Anyway, with that said, I want to wish the listening audience a Merry Christmas, and be sure to tune in tomorrow night. We're going to be broadcasting tomorrow night. Our special guest will be Mr. Jim Murray. In the meantime, have a night filled with peace, love, and light, and have a good night.
State your problem.
Picking up transmission from Mars.
This real nice campfire. Now all we need is the radio. Go get that radio so we can listen to BBS.
Gosh darn, boss, we got this here radio, but we ain't got no battery.
Well, I told you to buy some batteries yesterday, but you forgot to buy them today.
A man can only do so many things in one day. Go into town and get some for the both of us.
Go ahead. Make my day.
Dagnabbit, you and your BBS radio.
This is Joy Ray Freeman, spiritual warrior, master healer, and visionary co-creator of a better world, inviting you to tune in on Saturdays, 8 p.m. Pacific, to Station 3 on bbsradio.com, and enjoy archives of my international award-winning radio program, Joy to the World. It's a potpourri of music, inspiration, folksy philosophy, poetry, humor, storytelling, and introductions to people who are making a difference. It's lively, but not rowdy. It's sometimes serious, but not stuffy. It's a little funny, but not comical. And most of all, it's a passionate, sincere sharing from my heart to yours. Lend me your ear and I'll give you my dreams. You'll hear words and music with themes that speak truth to power, describe miracles, share alternative realities, encourage wholeness and health, include spiritual peace and justice activism, are heartwarming, enlightening, empowering, and thought-provoking, humorous and filled with vision and the hope of how we can create a brilliant future together. We have the unique opportunity to create the world the way we really want it, full of beauty, abundance, peace, harmony, and joy. This show is dedicated with love and light toward that potential. What do you have to lose? Nothing but a little frown here and there, some stress or sadness, I'll bet.
CBSRadio.com, your source to a world of inspiring information. This is the BBSRadio.com. My name is Spider Turner, and it's happening at the BBS, baby.
And sounds impossible to describe. Janubia, language of the heart. You've never heard anything like it, but like it you will. JANUBIA.com. Available on iTunes and Amazon.
BBSRadio.com, your source to a world of pure inspiration. I'm Renee Fea. My self-titled CD is available at CDBaby.com.
BBSRadio.com, your source to a world of inspiring information, removing fear through communication, engaging, powerful, unforgettable. My name is Spider Turner, and you can hear my music right here on the BBS.
Yeah. gotcha. You've been looking at me, and I've been trying to say what you were looking for. And you've been winking at me, and I've been winking at you. And then you blow me a kiss, and I want some more. She had a beautiful waist, incredible taste, celebrity face, and she knew it. Had a beautiful voice, and tried to follow the boys. I came to making a choice, and she do it to it, yeah. Said to me out loud, you really make me proud. I want you, baby. I was taken aback. So what you mean by that? You barely know me. Come on, this is crazy. Look at the way that you dress. Why don't you just confess? You're obviously obsessed with love. You've been looking away. Don't know what to say, but we'll make it one day. Love, so fine. Come on and show me a sign that you want some of my love. You've been eating it up while you've been working it down. I can't separate myself from the sound of love. Yeah, the sound of love. Oh, the sound of love. Yeah, yeah. I'm singing whoop da da yeah. Rota, rada, dee da 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 yeah. Rota, rada, dee da 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 yeah. Rota, rada, dee da 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 yeah. Boys are drooling, waste it, taste the face, you knew it. Voice and choice and boys are drooling, waste it, taste the face, you knew it. Voice and choice and boys are drooling, waste and taste and face, you knew it. Voice and choice and boys are drooling.
Hi, this is Marco May, and you're listening to my song, Arabica, from my album, River of Soul. I would like to invite you to my website at marcome.com. You are now listening to BBS Radio. If it's not mainstream, it's on bbsradio.com, the number one internet radio network on the planet. Enjoy!
Hello, this is Wesley Snipes. When I'm divinely inspired and spiritually motivated, I listen to bbsradio.com.
What? Sebo publishes a popular, inspirational, and insightful newsletter filled with information about her upcoming guests, her travel schedule, seminar presentations, and upbeat articles to lighten up your life. You can subscribe to this free monthly newsletter by emailing her at Donna@DelphiInternational.com. That's Donna@DelphiInternational.com. You can also go to her website, www.DelphiInternational.com, and review past publications. Keep in touch with Donna through this monthly publication. Again, her email address is Donna@DelphiInternational.com, and her website is www.DelphiInternational.com.
One day I'll tell you how it feels like, a day when everything is alright. I'd like to give it to you easy, yeah, I'm just hoping you can feel me.
Living on earth. They call this living, living on earth. They call this living, living on earth. The rich get richer, making more war. Richer and richer, making more poor. An eye for an eye, but turn the other cheek. As long as nothing interferes, nothing better stop the 40-hour week. Lies and misdirection are all the same.
Lies and misdirection are all the same.
Lies and misdirection are on your bed.
Lies and misdirection,
they work you till you're dead. And they call this living, living on earth. They call this living, living on earth. They call this living, living on earth. They call this living, living on earth.
Hey, this is Vinny James, and you're listening to BBSRadio.com.
That's Did you know your name and date of birth speak volumes about you as a person and as a spiritual being? Well, your personal numerology can shine a light on your life's purpose, your true potential, and give you insight about your soul's journey in this lifetime. Join Allison Bachman, host of Visible by Numbers, Monday nights at 5 p.m. Pacific Time on BBS Radio, as she unlocks the secrets of how to live a happier, healthier, and more purposeful life by using numerology as a guide. You'll be inspired by Allison's passion, her amazing on-air readings, insightful topics, and guests. You don't want to miss Allison's show Monday nights on BBS. Visit Allison at www.visiblebynumbers.com for more information. Be well.
Hello, this is Lee Taylor Young, and I'm visiting with you on BBS Radio.
Hi, this is Marco May, and you're listening to the number one internet radio network on the planet, bbsradio.com.
If your body isn't feeling too well these days, you're going to start taking this hemp, I say. Go to hempusa.org. You may not like what I'm about to say, but you know I'm going to say it anyway. The government doesn't want the best for you. They keep you down, they keep you blue. They starve your body for all its nutrients. They won't let you grow industrial hemp. It really doesn't make any kind of sense when it's so healthy for the world and useful for you, my friends. I hope Mr. Bush will hear this song, for the heart of America wants this one. Go to hempusa.org. If you're a truther, an anarchist, or renegade, you only want things that God has made.